This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, August 13th, 2010. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, Cruel, Cruel Summer. Here on the Eastern Seaboard, and throughout most of the country, I think, it has been unusually hot and humid for months now. In this age of global warming, summer heat is not only physically oppressive, it's also demoralizing, literally. Because when we try to escape the heat by retreating into the AC, we do so knowing that we're only making the problem worse. In fact, we are the problem. With such gloomy thoughts in mind, I did a search for summer-related poems on our website, poetryfoundation.org. And what I found cheered me up in a perverse kind of way, because according to our poets, summer has always been problematic. In fact, it just reeks of death. I found, for example, a really peculiar poem by Weldon Keyes called The Beach in August, which sounds cheery enough. I didn't know anything about Weldon Keyes until we recently produced a podcast of some of his recordings for the series Essential American Poets. Here's a bit from the intro to that podcast, read by Diantha Parker.
Keyes' poems are generally formal and restrained, though he's also known for a series of unusual persona poems that were published in The New Yorker. Critic John Thompson called Keyes a representative of his time. Poet Donald Justice believed Keyes was among the best of his generation, saying that his poems spoke in a tone of voice which we have never heard before.
That seems to be true. I've never heard the exact tone of voice in the poem that we're about to listen to. One note before we hear it. A pulmotor is a machine for pumping oxygen into and out of the lungs. This recording was made in Berkeley in 1952.
The beach in August. The day the fat woman in the bright blue bathing suit walked into the water and died, I thought about the human condition. Pieces of old fruit came in and were left by the tide. What I thought about the human condition was this. Old fruit comes in and is left and dries in the sun. Another fat woman in a dull green bathing suit dives into the water and dies. The pulmotors glisten. It is noon. We dry and die in the sun while the seascape arranges old fruit coming in with the tide, glistening at noon. A woman, moderately stout, in a nondescript bathing suit, swims to a pier. A tall woman steps toward the sea. One thinks about the human condition. The tide goes in and goes out.
Weldon Keyes reading his poem, The Beach in August. Okay, so it is a little weird that only women drown in this poem. It may well be just garden variety misogyny, making him really representative of his time, as that one critic said.
Another fat woman in a dull green bathing suit dives into the water and dies.
But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the male speaker in the poem, he's got to be a male speaker, right? He's interested in the bodies of the women on the beach, and he also knows the tides are as indifferent to him and his desires as it is to the women whose bodies he's sitting there evaluating.
We dry and die in the sun while the seascape arranges old fruit coming in with the tide, glistening at noon.
This indifference of nature to human life, seen from our perspective in the age of global warming, is weirdly apt. Now here's a weird bit of biography about Weldon Keyes.
By the mid-1950s, Keyes had divorced his wife and was suffering from depression. In July of 1955, Keyes' car was found abandoned by the Golden Gate Bridge with the key in the ignition. Just before he disappeared, Keyes had told a friend that, like Hart Crane, he wanted to start a new life in Mexico. It is still not known whether he killed himself or went to Mexico.
He may be dead, or he may have gone to Mexico. Very strange. Another summer poem with death at its core comes from Howard Nemiroff. He's not so far from us as Weldon Keyes is, but he's not necessarily a household name these days in poetry-loving homes. Once again, the Essential American Poets podcast fills us in.
Nemiroff is a formalist. His poems are written in meter and in fixed forms, such as the sonnet. He's praised for his creativity and wit, as well as his precision, within these given structures.
Now, this poem by Nemiroff is written in unrhymed iambic pentameter. It's called The Ice House in Summer. The ice house being, of course, the place where people used to store ice cut from lakes during the winter months for use in the summer. The poem was recorded at the Library of Congress in 1962.
The ice house in summer. A door sunk in a hillside with a bolt thick as the boy's arm. And behind that door, the walls of ice melting a blue faint light, an air of cedar branches, sawdust, fern, decaying seasons keeping from decay. A summer guest the boy had never seen, a servant told him of it, how the lake froze 3 foot thick, how farmers came with teams, with axe and saw, to cut great blocks of ice, translucent, marbled, glittering in the sun, load them on sleds and drag them up the hill to be manhandled down the narrow path and set in courses for the summer's keeping, the kitchen uses and luxuriousness of the great houses. And he heard how once a team and driver drowned in the break of spring. The man's cry melting from the ice that summer frightened the sherbet eaters off the terrace. Dust of the cedar, lost and evergreen among the slowly blunting water walls where the blade edge melted and the steel saw's bite was rounded out and the horse and rider drowned in the Red Sea's blood. I was the silly child who dreamed that riderless cry and saw the guests run from a ghostly wall so long before the winter house fell with the summer house and the houses, Egypt, the great houses, had an end.
Howard Nemiroff reading his poem, The Ice House in Summer. So the winter house and the summer house and presumably the ice house are in ruins at the end of that poem, but it's not clear why. And it's not clear why great empires fall either. Once again, we have a summer poem that weirdly speaks to our kind of end-of-the-world feeling about climate change. It has not only been hot and humid in New York all summer, but it hasn't rained either. The grass is brown and the trees are parched. So it was with some relief that I came upon a poem by Jane Kenyon called Heavy Summer Rain. It's a love poem, and the loved one is away, or perhaps he's dead. It's not quite clear in the poem. In any case, it doesn't remind one of global warming or anything of the kind.
Heavy summer rain. The grasses in the field have toppled, and in places it seems that a large, now absent animal must have passed the night. The hay will right itself if the day turns dry. I miss you steadily, painfully. None of your blustering entrances or exits, doors swinging wildly on their hinges, or your huge unconscious sighs when you read something sad, like Henry Adams's letters from Japan, where he traveled after Clover died. Everything blooming bows down in the rain. White irises, red peonies, and the poppies, with their black and secret centers, lie shattered on the lawn.
Jane Kenyon reading Heavy Summer Rain. I wonder if the loved one in that poem wasn't perhaps Donald Hall, who was married to Jane Kenyon until her death in 1995. Donald Hall is the former poet laureate who a few years ago chose all the poems included in the Essential American Poets series, which we've been sampling from here. We release a new Essential American Poets podcast every 2 weeks. You can subscribe in the iTunes store, or you can listen to previous episodes, and there's a lot of them now, on our website, poetryfoundation.org. Let us know what you thought of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.